Welcome to the Weekend Warriors Home Improvement Show with Tony and Corey.
Built by Par Lumber. Go where the builders go.
When it comes to big or small projects around the home, Tony and Corey have the know-how and the answers to make your life just a bit easier. Here they are, the hosts of Weekend Warriors Home Improvement Show, Tony and Corey.
Welcome back, and thank you for staying tuned. You're listening to Tony and Corey, your Weekend Warriors. And we've been talking about all different types of projects that you could be doing around the house, small projects that you can do to, you know, continue to maintain your home, the maintenance that it requires all the time. But before we get back to that, we are going to go to Todd Brenton with Brenton's Outdoor Adventures. How you doing out there, Todd?
We're doing great, guys. How are you guys doing?
We are absolutely doing awesome, trying to inspire people to get off their couch and keep their homes maintenance. Homes are not maintenance free, and this is what we keep trying to tell people. But they just think the house is going to take care of itself. Like they think fish are going to catch themselves.
I'll tell you what, with as many wet springs as we've had in the last 3 or 4 years, and to have a spring the way we're having this out in the Northwest with zero rain and weather, there ought to be a bunch of projects out there that people are interested in trying to get taken care of, because you never know when we're going to have a spring and summer like this again.
That's for sure.
I agree.
And if they're not going to be out maintaining their home, then they should definitely be on a boat catching fish. What are you guys catching today?
We're catching sturgeon again. The keeper sturgeon season's open in the Columbia, and we caught quite a few this morning. We're just actually starting to get into a pretty good bite here while we've been on the phone with you, and we just released one that was about a half inch short, and we're looking for some actual keepers this time. We've been catching and releasing them in the Willamette and doing some salmon fishing, and now we're in here keeper sturgeon fishing, and we've been getting some fish, so it's been pretty good.
Here's my take on what goes on when you're out there on the boat. Here's what I'm at. I like fish. I like to eat fish. I don't like to prepare fish. I certainly don't like to clean fish. I don't like to handle fish. I like to eat it. But I'll tell you what I do like, no matter what's going on. I love to catch a fish. I love to catch it. I love to reel it in, and get it in the boat. If it's a half an inch short, and that means that I haven't caught, I'm not that much closer to catching my limit. You bet. Throw it back out. I'd like to catch like 50 fish that aren't keepers before, before I catch one I actually get to eat. Because it's all about the journey.
Yeah, that's really easy to do. We can do that pretty much any day during the week. There's a lot of catch release that's going on. Sport fishing for sturgeon. There's a pile of fish and a couple of the tributaries that are closed for retention right now. And it's probably the best fishing that we have. And there's a bite right there, guys. Watch this rod right here. We got one guy holding the rod over here. We got another guy getting a bite, and they're all watching me on the phone with you guys. we're actually doing pretty good today. But, yeah, no, there's plenty of fish out here in the Columbia, and they actually started migrating out. A lot of people think that they're like catfish or like fish in a lake where they just hold in certain bodies of water. And what they don't realize is these fish actually migrate down to the coast and out of the rivers, and they move back and forth. And there's different size groups of fish, and those fish do different things throughout the year. And the big breeders, the broodstock fish that come in, they're like 6, 7, 8 feet, 9 feet long. We just did a trip last Tuesday where we had about 5 or 6 of those to the boat, and they're starting to show up. And then the keeper size fish, or the legal size fish between 38 and 54 inches, those fish are starting to pull out of the Willamette and Sandy Rivers and hit the main body of the Columbia, which is where we're at today, and they're starting to head down to the coast for June. So it's the migration has started. We're having an early year this year.
Awesome.
That's awesome. My favorite thing is to catch the fish that are way too big to keep, because, the fight, it's all about the fight, at least for me. You hook one of those big, giant fish and fight him all the way to the boat, and then not be able to keep it and let him go. I'm fine with that.
Well, it's a fun deal. We've got some real big ones. If guys can go to my website at brentonsoutdooradventures.com or try Columbia River Salmon Sturgeon.com is a little bit easier to remember. There's a whole video that I did with Peter Wright from Marlin Magazine on there where we actually broke the unofficial IGFA light line record on 30-pound test, and we land a 720-pound fish at the boat in about 45 minutes.
Oh my goodness.
How heavy?
What?
700, and actually was estimated at 718 pounds is where he was, 720 pounds.
That's a river monster right there.
That's what we did. We kind of did a river monster show on a little bit different platform, but old Pete's done some marlin fishing down in, all over the world, and he's actually what they call the Grander Club, where the guys that have caught 1,000-pound marlin, and in the world. He's the leading record holder in the whole United States and other continents, Australia, Hawaii, everywhere. And we had a lot of fun on that show with him.
Oh, my goodness.
Anybody out there that is like me, right, and enjoys the fight of the fish, clearly that right there is the perfect advertisement for Brenton's Outdoor Adventures. If you want to catch a 700-pound fish, call Todd Brenton. I mean, that is crazy right there.
One of these weekends, you guys are going to have to get out here on the boat, and we'll do a couple live feed shots back to your website, and we'll do some fishing and maybe do a radio show from the boat, and we can talk decks and house maintenance and just about everything you want to talk about, and do a live show from the boat and give feeds back to your website so people can listen and watch at the same time.
Sounds like a great idea.
That would be awesome. And I wouldn't do it with anybody but you, Todd. Thank you so much for being on the radio with us.
You guys push those people into going outside and working on their houses. They need to, because winter's going to come pretty quick, faster than we all want.
Agreed. All right, man. Well, thanks again, and we'll talk to you next week.
You guys have a great weekend. We'll talk to you later.
You thanks, too. Todd. See you, Todd.
Bye.
Oh, my goodness. 700 pounds?
I think he caught Nessie.
That's almost like a whale or something. That is crazy.
Majestic.
That is absolutely insane.
I couldn't imagine that.
Are you wanting to get back to tree trimming, or can we address this heater, this furnace deal?
We can talk about this furnace. So we had a call during the break from a gal who has a furnace with a Honeywell electronic air cleaner attached to the top.
Right. This is Teresa's furnace, and Teresa had replaced her furnace 2 years ago. She got a new American Standard furnace. And the air cleaner, the Honeywell air cleaner, was there with the old furnace, okay? They replaced the furnace, got a new one. The Honeywell air cleaner, electronic air cleaner, still there. Okay, so something stopped working properly, right? And so they called the furnace guy out to come and check it out. The furnace guy says that this Honeywell air cleaner is not working properly and needs to be replaced. He pulled out one of the cells. So tell me about the cells that are in this cleaner, because you had one just
so
like
yeah
this.
So you talked about this, and I had in my old house the exact same setup. It was a Honeywell electrostatic air cleaner that sat on top of a plenum, and then the cold air return came through this and then down through the furnace. And what this was meant to be was it plugged in, it turned on, and it was it would collect the dust and dirt and filter your air, and then you'd be able to pull it out, hose it off.
You pull out those cells.
Yep, and then hose it off, put them back in, turn it on, and that was your furnace filter. Unfortunately, mine did not work. It did not turn on. It didn't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of that, we had that other typical paper filter that you're used to seeing.
That was part of the furnace.
Right.
So it sounds. This is what it sounds like. It sounds like that Teresa's electrostatic air cleaner, Honeywell air cleaner, is not working, and she's gotten a new furnace. It's a 2-year-old American Standard furnace. They pulled the filters, the paper filters, out of the furnace, the new furnace, and cleaned those and put them back in, but the electrostatic air cleaner is not working. So the guy came out and took a look at it and said, you know, it looks like it's going to be about $300 to probably replace that whole unit. He said, for $50, I can maybe just replace this cell. And then maybe if this cell gets replaced, maybe it will work properly after. So ultimately, in the end, Teresa, what we're going to do a little bit more research on this. But what we want to tell you is that probably we feel that your new American Standard furnace will work properly alone with the paper filters that it has, and the electrostatic Honeywell cleaner, air cleaner on top, is not necessary to operate your furnace. So you should be able to operate that okay. If you want that extra cleaning, then replacing that Honeywell air cleaner would be necessary for that. We'll get back to that a little bit later. We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to Tony and Corey, your weekend warriors. Stay tuned.
Weekend Warriors Home Improvement Show with Tony and Corey. Built by Par Lumber. Now, here's Tony and Corey.
Hey, welcome back to the show, everybody. So today we're talking about just general stuff. Maintenance around your house that you should be thinking about or doing. And so far we've covered, you know, cleaning out your furnace, trimming up some shrubs and maybe taking out a weed that's popping up through the middle of one of your shrubs, like at my house. Mm-hmm. Before a couple breaks ago, I was talking about trimming your trees.
The proper way.
The proper way.
And the improper way. We started with the improper way.
Yeah, and we're kind of still lingering on that because the people that trimmed the tree in my backyard did it improperly, and it turned out very poor for the tree.
Right.
So I'm trying to currently clean that up.
Right.
Because let me paint this picture for you. Let me give you the situation. I've got this tree, and there's a fence. And about 7 feet up, about a foot above the fence, there's a large branch growing straight towards my deck. Mm-hmm. And at the end of it, where it grew to the deck, they just chopped it off straight.
Because they didn't want it hanging over the deck.
They didn't want it hanging over the deck.
Sure.
So they just cut it straight at the deck. Well, there's about three or four of these branches that are growing towards the deck that they just cut off between what they call nodes. So they just cut them at no break point or no node or no
split.
They just cut them. Well, what's happened is the tree tries to repair itself, and it grows at new sprouts.
New shoots, new sprouts.
So they come out, and they grow perpendicular to that branch. So then they're growing up.
So it looks like a big peacock tail.
Kinda, at the end of that thing.
Yeah.
Kind of like a tail. Like a peacock tail. It's a good analogy there. So, and then when those grew, they cut those straight off at the deck. Well, over the years, this has caused a giant mess at the edge of that tree.
At the end of that branch.
And then from the end of that branch all the way back to the main tree trunk, there's practically nothing on that tree.
Because it's been devoting all of its resources to repairing the end of that branch, which makes that branch as a whole
very weak.
Weaker
and all the,
from there, that point back.
There are shoots coming back off that are dead. And that has caused that branch to be just dangerous.
Right.
For one, it's ugly.
Mm-hmm.
And for two, it's dangerous. I've got a 3.5-year-old daughter. She's playing out underneath that thing, and there's dead branches everywhere up there, large ones.
Mm-hmm.
So I've gone through and I've cut back
those long
ones back to the tree, back to nodes, back to the crowns and the splits where they should be pruned. That's the proper way to prune.
Mm-hmm.
So that being said, there's something called topping and something called tipping.
Mm-hmm.
Topping and tipping. Topping is the method of just cutting off a tree at the top. And you've seen this by electric companies. They'll come in and say, well, we've got power lines up there, and they'll just top the tree off flat.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Well, what that causes is it's kind of like I equate it to trimming a hedge. Like if you've got boxwoods,
mm-hmm.
you know, typically you get your hedge trimmers, maybe the electric ones or the hand ones that, you know, chop, chop, chop like scissors.
And you shape them.
Yeah, you can shape them.
Like Edward Scissorhands.
Yeah, but there's nodes every, half inch on a boxwood, maybe less?
Okay.
So you can do that. On a tree, it's a little different. If you were to cut a tree between a node, which is where a leaf comes out or another branch or a shoot, and just cut it in the middle, It damages that tree right there, so then it wants to sprout off again.
Right.
So you don't want to do that. You want to cut it at where it splits. And tipping is the same as topping, except that that's when you're reducing the width of a tree. So you're just going in and you've seen this too, maybe where a tree, like a large tree, is growing into a roadway,
mm-hmm.
and you've seen it where they've just cut it out square.
Yep, straight up the side.
So box vans can fit through there.
Right, right.
Everybody's seen that. Well, that's not good for the tree.
Mm-hmm.
And it might not kill the tree, but it's not good for it, especially in a yard. If it's in your front yard, you want it to be beautiful. You don't want it to be...
You want it to be healthy.
You want it to be healthy.
And you want it to be safe.
Right.
So pretty, healthy, and safe.
Right. So the proper procedure for pruning that tree is to, and especially I like to do this, I like to raise what they call the crown. The crown of the tree is the big branchy part of the tree.
Mm-hmm.
So if you've got branches at the base that are 2-3 feet off the ground, I like to raise that up so I can walk under the tree.
Mm-hmm.
So raise it up above your head. If you've got a 30-40 foot tree, cut all the branches up at the bottom and just keep raising that up.
Raise the crown.
That's raising the crown.
Mm-hmm.
My rule of thumb is any branch growing towards the ground,
mm-hmm.
if it's growing down to get at the sunlight, because that's what trees do, mm-hmm. they're smart.
They know what they need.
They know what they need.
They know where their bread is buttered. On the sunny side. On the sunny side.
That's right. They will grow towards sun. So if you've got branches coming off and shooting down towards the ground just to get a little bit of sunlight, take them out.
Mm-hmm.
Because they don't. You don't want that happening, because then they get tangled. It creates dead spots in the tree, and it ultimately makes it unhealthy,
mm-hmm.
and not very good to look at.
Mm-hmm.
So if you thin it out, that way it'll get enough light to the center, and it'll look a lot better.
Great.
So how about that? I mean, we were talking about this in between the breaks, and you were like, this is, I don't
it's
even
a
get
lot
it.
Of, it's just a lot of information.
It is a lot.
When you think about trimming a tree, and you think, yeah, I'm going to go trim a tree, you just don't realize that there's so much information. If you're taking it seriously enough to trim the tree in a proper way, that you don't damage the tree and that you leave it safe and healthy and also looking good, then there's a lot to it. And that's just what we're talking about.
Right.
If you have any questions about that or how to trim your tree properly, contact an arborist.
Yeah. The easiest and safest way is to call an arborist. But, you know, if you want, go to our PAR page. I'll post a blog on our PAR webpage about how to properly trim a tree.
Yep, that's good information. I'm going to move back inside the house for our next tip, okay?
All right.
I think that proper maintenance of your home is what we're talking about, proper maintenance. And one of the things that it goes unaddressed regularly are handle sets, doorknobs all over your home, you know? Because doorknobs, you think, they seem like they should last forever. But the fact is, they don't. And when they start to get where you turn the knob and it stays turned, you know, it kind of gets sticky inside there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these are not really, doorknobs are not really something that you repair. Because if you're talking about the exterior of your door, this is the thing that keeps you separated from everything outside your house, okay? The lock and the mechanism of your front door handle, for example, is very important. If you're turning your knob and it's sticking, it's not something that you want to try to repair. You need to replace it. And if you're going to replace one doorknob, if your doorknobs are 4 or 5 years old or 6 or 7, you need to replace them all. Choose the finish that you want and the style that you want, and go out and buy new doorknobs, because they're all going to wear out eventually anyways.
And buy nice ones so you don't have to replace them every 5 years.
That's right. So replacing your doorknobs, especially your front and exterior doors, is a good maintenance tip. Okay, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. You're listening to Tony and Corey, your weekend warriors.